following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Logitoche. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. So how's it going? How's it going in your Misfit world? I've been, you know, good. I'm booking out the United States of Misfits tour. That's what I'm calling it. I'm bringing the Misfit Variety Show to Chicago, Indianapolis, Detroit, Kalamazoo, maybe Grand Rapids. Maybe I'm forgetting. Oh, Denver too in April. Yes, it's all going on the road. And also Boca Raton in March. It's a lot. As you can tell, it's a lot to hold in my brain. I have an epic spreadsheet. You know, what's hard to do is find the weirdo performers in places outside the big markets. Like Chicago took me approximately 15 minutes to book because I knew someone who knew someone, and it was just so simple. And I've made contact with comedians in other places in the smaller markets like Kalamazoo, and they have a hard time. Like, who is the weirdo comedian? Like, who's the person with the story? And they don't have a lot of names on that list, if any. So it's been tough. And I think that's testament to all of the misfits feeling like they have to move to a larger city to find community. But I'm not losing hope because I feel like there are misfits out there and they need the misfit weirdo comedian performers. They need stage time. They're looking for places to get up because the mainstream people won't have them. So I am not giving up hope. I'm making it happen. I am determined to find the misfits wherever we go and bring this variety show and make a night of it. So that's how I've been doing. Before we get into our very fun interview with Carmen Angelica, a reminder, please do rate and review this podcast because social proof of misfits is super important because misfits trust other misfits to know what's good. Also, you can sign up for the podcast reminders about every month at laurenlogi.com. You can also sponsor a podcast. This is something we're doing. I don't think anyone else is doing it. We've invented it here. We are making it possible for individuals and small businesses to sponsor a podcast episode, a birthday, a holiday, etc. And if we sponsor an episode, we can put it out more often, more than every other week. To even do it every week. So go to laurenlogi.com, click on Listen and Podcast, and contact us there to talk about it. The interview today is with writer, director, and comedian Carmen Angelica. She's a segment director at The Daily Show and a brilliant comedian around New York City. She was a New Faces creator at the Just for Laughs Festival, which is a pretty big deal. She has her hands in a lot of pots, and I think this interview is important for people who have their hands in a lot of pots because we get told, myself included, like, you gotta choose, you gotta find. And what people misunderstand is that us multi-passionates thrive on being involved in different facets of entertainment. And we talk about the importance of going out there and making stuff, just making it. Do it. I mean, like, for instance, this United States of Misfit tour would not happen if I didn't, like, spend time making stuff, all the little segments that go into the show, just making it, just doing it. Like, I made an Instagram, a Melania Trump channel, and that was just me just, like, making stuff and keeping myself available to make stuff. So this interview will hopefully get you inspired to do the same. Let's go to this interview with your friend in mine, Carmen Angelica. Well, thank you, Carmen Angelica, for being on Misfits Making It.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So you got your BFA from NYU, and then they let you into the wilds of New York City.
I know. Can you believe it?
Like, what was your first step? Because I feel like a lot of people are like, you know, like, they graduate, they hand in the diploma, and then they're like, what the fuck?
I think that's exactly how I was when I graduated. I was like,
like, I have to do what now? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I graduated and I did not immediately have work in the industry. Uh-huh. I think I was working as a like website designer for a bit. Mm-hmm. I did graphic design as like a minor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing comedy. And then I
had UCB, had right?
At UCB. Yeah, I was doing comedy at UCB. And then I pretty quickly moved to LA.
Hmm.
Because I had an opportunity where I had written this like TV pilot and Bible. It wasn't, it was just some TV show thing. And I was flown out to interview with this production company. And for me, I was like, oh, these are the opportunities I want. And I'm not getting them in New York, but I did get them in LA. So I flew out and I did comedy and PA'd and interned and for a very long time out in LA until I kept writing and shooting shorts and web series. And I did like a solo show that ran for a while in LA and New York. And that got me attention as a writer, director, mm-hmm, performer. Mm-hmm.
So when you were being flown out, you're pretty early into your career, right?
Yeah, I think it was 22. I think they were looking at graduates, recent graduates from all around the country, mm-hmm, who had like written something. And so we submitted and yeah, I got my piece got picked.
Yeah. What's some advice you have for people like not to fuck that up? Because you have like, I mean, like in terms of just knowing how meetings run and the players and how it all goes down, like you're new to that. And like that's such a precious meeting because you can fuck it up easy. I think, right?
I'm not going to say I necessarily succeeded. I didn't get a TV show picked up. But all I could do was like be excited about the work that I wanted to present. And I think I didn't get a TV show out of it, but I did get the opportunity to be in front of people. And if you do that, that itself is like mm-hmm half the battle, in my opinion, because the more people who know you, mm-hmm, this project may not be the right fit at the moment for whatever reason. But if people know you and like you, it's more likely that they're going to call you back for something else or they're interested in future work that you do. So I think instead of being worried about, oh, am I going to mess up this specific pitch? Make sure that like, keep in mind that, you know, there's going to be so many more times where you might meet this person, mm-hmm, or work with them, or they might remember you. So just more than anything, be like nice, be mm-hmm professional, and like showcase whatever like your voice is, your excitement is.
Yeah. So like be passionate about what you're doing and just let it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go.
And don't be too worried about, I think I notice a lot of people get worried if you're just like, here's my piece, here's my thing. Have, you know, you can have a conversation. The more you connect with people, the more people are more excited about like to hear what else you're excited about.
Cool. So super cool. That's really good. It's like you're enough. Like you as a creator are enough. You don't need to be like putting on some sort of and something like I got this piece, you know, sort of persona of like ultra business person, if that makes sense. Like you as just a passionate creator who's interested is like great.
Yeah. I think people want to, you know, if they're meeting with you, it usually means like, oh, something piqued their interest, you know, whether it was your previous work, whether it was a concept mm-hmm that you have mm-hmm that they're bringing you in for. But at the end of the day, like all you can do is be as friendly and nice and excited, but, you know, human in an interview.
Yeah.
And people can tell if it's like a little too, I don't know. People can tell if it's like, if you feel formulaic, you know, I know it sucks to hear like be yourself, but like, you know, it is helpful to be yourself.
Yeah. Well, when people hear this, like they're hearing pitches all day long, they've heard every formula, every shtick. So the only shtick they haven't heard is yours.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes they might not get it right away. And there's really nothing you can do if like somebody doesn't connect with mm-hmm maybe the idea you have, or even like maybe they're tired.
You know, I think there's a lot to, because like you said, they're hearing so many pitches, so many people. If you're in like the development world, they're just constantly meeting people, constantly hearing pitches, and they could be exhausted or they could have had a bad day. So I think it's kind of not putting too much onus on anything, because you could also meet that person a year from now, several years from now, and then you have a great meeting. There have been so many times where I like, you know, I interviewed, I didn't get it. It was a no. It was like a, you know, it was pretty devastating to hear like, oh, that's a no. And then years down the line, I saw them again. And then they were like, hey, you know, I remember we met once before. I'd love to talk again. What else are you up to? So in a certain way, like one, a no in like a meeting in the past doesn't mean like there's not going to be more in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely. And isn't it like a yes? Like you could get a yes and that doesn't mean you're going to keep getting yeses. It's like...
Exactly. Yeah. In a way, it's, you know, nothing. It doesn't... The yeses and the noes, they're temporary. Everything's temporary. But yeah, I think, you know, I think it's in... especially in the beginning, it feels really like... If I hear a no, it's a no forever. In the case of a meeting or like a concept pitch or something, it's like, oh no, if they don't like this, they'll never like anything of mine. And that's just not the case.
And would you ever do a solo show again? You did it in New York and LA and it was like a thing that helped you a lot. Would you ever do it again?
Maybe. I mean, I don't want to say no. I might. It was a lot of work, and with the work that I do now, it would not be feasible with my... I mean, right now, I guess everybody's kind of on break, on a forced break. So maybe now would be the right time to do a solo show. But it took me about a year to make the solo show, and then I was performing it for about a year and a half. And it takes... If you're going to do it... I mean, it might take less time now since I did it once before. You know, as you do things more, you can kind of do them a little faster because you know what to expect. I don't think right now I feel like doing another solo show, but maybe in the future. It just takes a lot. It just like anything, if you want to do something right, it just takes a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a few solo shows and was like, never again, because it's so hard because everything comes down on you unless you have like a bag of money to just like pay other people to do stuff. But most people are like DIYing it and it's so hard, but also a great training ground. I could see why you got so much value. Yeah.
Yeah. It was helpful and I got a lot out of it. Personally, because I was trained in film, I'm a little bit more like, oh, if I'm going to put a ton of work and like my time and effort and money into something, to me, I've found that films are a little bit more helpful. I would rather make a short film. I would rather make something that I could show people again, wherever they are. If there's somebody, you know, it's harder to get people to come to your solo show than it is to send them a link to your newest short.
Yeah. I mean, especially in LA, LA's tough to get people to come to stuff compared to New York where people are just like, go to stuff a lot to just a different,
yeah,
it's a different ask, a 20 minute train ride versus like an hour and a half in traffic, different situation.
I mean, you know, and sometimes it's an hour and a half on a train.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that can be true too.
It could be an ask either way. So I think, for me, that's just been my inclination. Mm-hmm. Although there is something to like live theater. It's wonderful.
Definitely. I've heard this before. I heard this even from a musician friend. She travels a lot in Europe. And she was saying like she felt like the tour is amazing and wonderful and what she wants to be doing with her life. But she felt like it was over and then it was over. So she actually created a film around her tour to present as like kind of like a representation of what she was trying to say. So it lasts. You know,
that's super smart. Yeah. I did a short film based off of parts of my solo.
Oh, you did.
Show.
You did. And how soon? Yeah.
So that like it did well. It got a Vimeo staff picked.
Hell yeah.
So it got attention. Yeah. So it got some attention and stuff. But to me, that was like, I think that's a really smart move. It's like you can do the solo show, but then you can figure out what can come from your solo show. Is it, you know, are parts of it going to be utilized? Are you going to write a pilot based off of it? You know, like, you know, Fleabag was inspired by a solo show. Yeah. So like, you know, what's nice is it doesn't just end at the solo show. It can develop into more,
yep,
whatever you want it to be.
And so when you make short films, are you DIYing it? Are you like getting a big team of like, how did you start? How are you now? Like, what's that journey been like?
Well, when I was starting and I was just doing like sketches and web series, in the days of web series, it would usually be me and a very small crew, or sometimes just me, mm-hmm, and, you know, depending on the project, I would maybe, you know, save and put more money into it, or I would really call in. I think my first big project, I just called in every favor, and then I owed people so many favors of like working on their sets for free, or like helping out with whatever they were doing, their projects were. But I think depending on the project, the size of the crew, in the beginning, it really was there. I just remember one of my early pieces that I filmed was just me behind the camera doing sound, mm-hmm, everything. And then I asked friends who were comedians to be in it.
Mm, that's great. And it's just like, sometimes people, so I have a lot of friends who've put everything they like own, everything they have, into like one short film or one web series. Yeah. And I see the look on your face. It's just like, because it's like, you have to keep making them to get better.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's so hard. It is so hard, yeah, because it does take a lot. And like, you know, in certain cases, what's nice about like a solo show is you can at least you're right, it is all on you, but like you don't have to hold a camera in front of your own face. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and you have a stage. Usually you can arrange something with like a theater. But with film, you know, you do really have to, like you said, gather all your resources.
Yep.
Utilize every resource that you have. And for me, I always, at least because I was like, I need to make more than one thing, because one thing will never be your, you can't, very rarely, some people do, but very rarely does one thing that you make your career. Usually your career is a body of work. And the only way you can accumulate a body of work is by making as many things as you can.
Yep.
And it's going to be the thing you don't expect to do amazing that does amazing, or like that gets you a ton of attention. Like I have one piece that I remember I made when I was working at cracked.com. I was like, oh man, I love this piece so much. I love this piece. It's so good. And it got no views. It got nothing. But then years later, every time somebody has, like whenever I've had development meetings or something and I send the piece as an example of my work, people love that. And that's gotten me more jobs. That's gotten me more attention. Mm-hmm. It got like that video was one of the reasons I got into JFL. Mm-hmm. And it's something where I was like, oh, this is something I was, when it came out and it got nothing, it got no views, nobody really liked it, or like it didn't get attention online. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well,
yeah,
I hoped it would have worked, but it didn't. And then it did, versus other pieces that have done really, really well, mm-hmm, online. But I wouldn't say people don't like pluck me from the crowd, mm-hmm, because of that video.
Oh, yeah.
So, mm-hmm, you just never know what's going to hit. And I think the more you do it, it's just the better you are. Like, you want to be a good artist. You don't want to be a one-hit wonder,
totally,
if you will.
Yeah, I agree. I've made so many things. I'm like, I know this is not optimized. Like, I did a Melania Trump impression, and I did a whole series of videos called Melania Thunk, which is her, like, kind of existing in her world. And over is her voiceover of saying Sartre quotes from Nausea, the book. So it was like French philosophy somehow actually sounds like her thoughts. So it's like she's saying this like French philosophy, and then you see her sort of like, you know, contemplating or doing something weird or like eating something, and it like all makes sense. It's all funny. People really love it, but it's like it was never optimized for the internet. And like, you just got to make stuff that like makes you, like, if you think it's good, you just got
to
do it.
Yeah. And also, like, why are we doing this if not to make stuff that we are excited about and proud of and have fun with? Like, you know, I think if you put so much into one project, it can break your heart. Mm-hmm. And you just have to like, and if you, I would say you can put your heart and soul into a project for sure. Don't put your heart and soul into a project just to get accolades at the end, because you don't know how people if it's going to get attention. You don't know if it's going to get where you want. You know, it will probably never do exactly what you hope it will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Because it's not the thing that's going to do the thing for you. It's you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the consistency, for sure.
Yeah. So, but it is tough because, like, you want to put a lot into things. And I would say, like, you know, obviously you should, if you have a passion project, something sings to you, make that thing, like, do it. And also know that, like, you're going to want to have other projects in the works. I mean, you will, because you want to make more of this. So it's kind of inevitable.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And when did you transition from being a performer to director, or were you always directing while you were performing?
I kind of did everything all at once.
Sounds very relaxing.
I know. I was really chill. I was really chill and fun. I would put a lot of focus into, I'm somebody who likes to do all of it. And that's one thing I know that has been confusing for people, because they'll be like, well, what do you like to do the most? And I'm like, if I had to choose, I would. But luckily I don't live in that. I get to kind of do what I want.
Yep.
So I would write a lot, and I would, and it also kind of all feeds into each other. I love performing. And one of the things I liked to do, the reason I loved performing, is it would let me execute, like, the lines that I had written, the dialogue that I had written, whatever the piece was, to how I expected it to be. And then I was, especially because, you know, like anything else, you have to practice to get good. I was new to directing, and I didn't, you know, by performing, I learned how I would want people to communicate direction to me. So it helped me become a better director. And then I was able to practice being a director on other sets or in other pieces of mine, so that I could get proficient enough at it to be able to do it in the professional realm.
So there's, like, a scale of, like, you know, an indie film director is, like, the boss, the first to the last, usually, depending. And then episodic TV is a little bit less control. They're not, like, the ultimate boss in terms of, like, their writers have a lot of control. Like, they're, it depends on that. Maybe they wrote it, so there's, like, a different circumstances. But on that, like, kind of spectrum of how much creative control you have over the project, like, where would you see segment director is on that scale?
Well, segment director at this job, because I think it depends on the job. Like, when I was directing at Cracked, it was different than when I was directing at College Humor, which is different from when I was directing at The Daily Show. It depends. And in this case, I would say I get to definitely have a lot of, I think with sketches, you know, like, I think in any case, if you're dealing with a script, like a sketch, something that is written, you want to make sure that you capture the writer's words, you capture what the writer wrote to the best of your ability. Sometimes things don't work on set. Blocking needs to, you know, change, or, like, the dialogue, we realize once we say it out loud that it doesn't work. And so you make sure to give alternatives so that it is a smoother cut and edit. But majority of the times, I worked as a writer for so long, I really do believe in trying to respect the writer's vision, because you would want somebody to do that to you. So when it comes to that, I do try to make sure that it's as close to this as it is scripted as possible. And then when it's the unscripted pieces, that, you know, it's unscripted. So you kind of have to be very good with being flexible about what we could possibly find when they're there, what interview defines it, or what actions that happen around you, you know, how it affects you. So in that realm, it's much more flexible. And I do have, I would say, much more writing control, because I have to kind of find the story. It's like a halfway point between documentary and narrative.
Fun. Who comes up with the alts when you're on set, something's not working?
Well, we have wonderful comics who are our contributors and correspondents. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they are very fast on their feet. Mm-hmm. And then we usually have, you know, a brainstorm with our writers ahead of time to come up with any potential funny questions they could ask, any potential, you know, like, just trying to be ready for, like, okay, what is the situation we're going into, so that they can have, you know, be as comedically prepared as possible. But otherwise, I would say, like, we have to be on the fly, you know, we have to be on the fly. And we don't usually have writers on set because they are needed for the show.
Yeah.
So I, you know, as a director, you know, I can pitch things, but I would say our comedians are very quick on their feet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like it's such a great blend for you. Someone who's like performed and directed and made your own stuff, like to be doing that kind of work because it's so much on the fly creating as you're going. Yeah. Super neat. I love when like people find their, it just seems like it's like a wonderful job for you. And that's so cool that like, I love when people find their thing, you know? Oh,
thank you. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's been honestly the best. I can't wait to get back to it. When the strike is over, I just can't wait because it's been so fun.
Any bits or segments you've been dreaming up? Like, oh man, I really want to do a bit on this.
I mean, right now, I think that obviously, I think there are so many things I would love to do, but mm-hmm. a lot of it depends on, you know, you want it to be pretty topical. Mm. And so I always collect news stories. I always collect like things that are happening in the zeitgeist or the news mm-hmm. On my phone that I'm like, ooh, is this something we could explore? Ooh, is this a piece that we could do? But, you know, things are only evergreen for so long. Mm. And right now, I'm just not sure what's going to be still relevant. You know, mm-hmm. things are happening so fast.
Yep.
So, yes, there are a lot of things I'm very excited to do, but I don't know which I'm going to be able to do yeah. before they're kind of old news.
Yeah. So Jay Martell, who's the showrunner on Strangers with Candy, Alternatino and Key and Peele, he was on the podcast and he was saying like, he was talking about something he wrote in the New Yorker, how like it is so impossible to be absurd when everything is absurd. Do you all run into that yes. trouble?
Yes. Yeah. It is. I mean, that is like, I think that's the major challenge right now. But I think sometimes it's just pointing out the absurdity. Half of it is just, like you said, some of the stuff you're like, I can't make this up. This actually yeah. happened. So some of it is just pointing out like, mm-hmm. that's a little weird. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, especially if you're doing anything in the topical world, it does feel like it's just getting wackier and wackier.
Mm-hmm. Think in Alternatino, they did a sketch where people were trying to change the inscription on the Statue of Liberty. Like, bring me your tired, your hungry. And then it happened in real life. And they were like, all right, like, I don't know what to do. Like,
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know Veep, there was like the Veep writers were saying like, we keep writing it and then it keeps happening.
Like, when comedians are like the soothsayers, like we have a really crazy world.
Yeah.
That's so nuts. So we have a segment we call your misfit moment, the moment when you realized that the traditional world was not for you. Yeah. So what would you say? Like, was that moment for you where you were like, regular world? No, thank you.
Regular world. Well, I guess like, what do you mean regular world? Like
accounting.
Accounting. Okay.
Like, you know, that like you could have 9-to-5 kind of world. Yeah.
Oh, got it. This is a great question. I guess, well, I've never been great at math. so it's kind of off the table for me.
You've been in this for a long time. Like, you went to school for film. So
yeah.
You were not on the traditional trajectory at all. Maybe ever.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think I would say if we're talking my career path dreams, when I was young, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut and then I wanted to be a soccer player. And then I wanted to be a flutist. And then, I took a screenwriting course, there was like a summer course they offered at USC and I had applied because I had always kind of like, I always liked to write. I was a big like bookworm. Stories were my favorite. And I watched a lot of TV as much as I could, as much as I was allowed to. My parents didn't mm-hmm. want me to watch very much, but I would sneak it. And I took a screenwriting course. I applied to this program and I got in and then I wrote. That was the first time I was like, oh, wait, all of this TV I'm watching, I could do this like as a job. Like, this is a job. I just thought TV had kind of appeared. I didn't think it was a career. And then when they were like, oh, yeah, screenwriting, it's how the words get made. And I was like, oh, I can write words. So I think that was a big moment for me. And then I was obsessed with SNL and I just was, and then I remember I had talked to my brother at one point cause I was like looking at extracurriculars mm-hmm. when I got into college, I was like, okay, I'll write scripts. And then I did a directing. I'd like did a film like where I learned to like with a little camcorder mm-hmm. film stuff. And I was like, okay, I'll be a director. So then I applied to NYU. And when I got in, I was looking at extracurricular activities, and my brother was like, I was talking to him and I was like looking at all these, you know, clubs. And there was this one where it said there was a sketch team. And I remember I called my brother and I was like, what is a sketch team? And he was like, it's like SNL. And I was like, bingo, we're in. So like, it was a lot of that. It just kept a lot of things. I just kept being like, wait, that's a thing. And then I would do it.
That's incredible. And so when you went to go take the screenwriting class, your family was supportive of that when you did that at USC, the summer program?
Yeah. I mean, I think, my family has been very supportive. They're not supportive of me watching a bunch of TV, but once they realized I was like, oh, I can write. Right. Because they're very support. Like, you know, I was always a funny kid, but I wasn't a loud kid. Mm-hmm. I was a very shy kid, mm-hmm. but I knew how to deflect a lot of stuff by being funny. So when I was uncomfortable, obviously, I would be very funny. mm-hmm. And I would write a lot of like, you know, in storytelling, like things like that. And my parents were very, very supportive of me writing and being creative. And
that's amazing. Yay, parents.
Yeah. Yeah. They were great. I will say I'm very, very, I realize also how very lucky I am that my parents were very supportive of me being, a creative and writer. And so when I said like, I think it was even my mom, like a lot of this, it was my mom where I was like, you know, looking at something to do in the summer. And my mom was like, well, you know, it would look good for colleges if you did some like programs. And I was like, okay. And she's like, and you know, you could do like, you know, we looked at all these different college programs that mm-hmm. I could potentially apply to and submit for. And I remember looking at the USC one and being like, could I try to submit? Like, it was I feel like anytime I've ever gotten anything is just me being like, I don't know, maybe I'll just like ask and see. So it was like, maybe I'll try and submit. So I submitted and luckily I did get in. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started and everything.
Yes, I feel like I need like a parent award sound effect here, because like it's Todd Downing also who edits Russian Doll. He was on here and he was like, yeah, my parents were always like, you can do it. Like you want to, you know, be a documentary filmmaker and an editor and whatever. Like, yay. I'm like, oh, we need more parents like these. Like mine were like, oh, pension benefits. What are you going to do with your life? And like,
I mean, yeah, I think let's be real, like that you're going to probably thrive if you do what you love, right? They always mm-hmm. say like, do what you love and you'll thrive. And, even whether it be financially or emotionally. And I think my parents were very much, they were like, we'll do the best to help you in however we can, you know? So the best way that they helped me was just being like, we believe in you. We like your stuff. We'll read your stuff.
Oh
we'll,
my God, we'll clap they read for you. Your stuff?
Yeah, they would read my stuff because I had atrocious spelling. Also, like I am, you know, my math is not great. My spelling was terrible. Honestly, like I was like, maybe that's why I was, you know, unable to be an accountant because God, what a skill. But I think like my parents were very, like they were very, very kind and supportive, and I'm so eternally grateful for that.
Yay parents, cool. We have another segment called Misfit Inspiration, Misspiration if you will.
I love these sound effects.
Yeah, they make me happy. So when you're in times of doubt, you know, there's the ups, the downs, what do you go to? A movie, a clip, a biography, a quote, whatever it is that you use to like just keep inspired?
Ooh, okay. That's a great question. Actually, right now I'm in what I describe as like my inspiration hunting.
Okay.
Because I think a quote I would say that I go to whenever I feel like we can feel like we always have to output. We always mm-hmm. have to be making stuff and putting mm-hmm. stuff out there and stuff like that. And trust me, there were many years where that is all I did. And I had one of my comedy teachers. This is a very, it's inappropriate, but this is what she told me. She was like, I remember I would do comedy all the time. I had no free time. I had no hobbies. I had nothing else. All I did was comedy. Mm-hmm. All I did was comedy. And at one point she said, well, Carmen, you can't just do work about work. You can't just do comedy about comedy. You're eating your own shit. at a certain point, you're eating your own shit. She's like, you have to go out. And really, I think there's a much better, like there's a less poop filled way of describing this quote. But, you know, it's the idea of like, you can't exhale without inhaling.
I love that.
So that's a quote that I always try to remember whenever I feel like I'm like just outputting to output.
Mm-hmm.
And then also sometimes when I need to like shake myself, I say, stop eating your own shit, Carmen. mm-hmm. But it's, which is a gross picture, but you know, it mm-hmm. really does give you a wake up mm-hmm. call. Rebecca Drysdale said that to me. I remember that very vividly. That was her thing she said to me. She's like, she says that and I live by it. And then when I'm looking for, when I'm actively like, okay, Carmen, we need to inhale. We need to like find inspiration. A lot of times I will make sure that I go somewhere I've never been before. I watch a movie I've never watched before. I read books that I haven't read before. I try to learn about something sometimes I'll even just look up like weird facts. Like mm-hmm. that was something where if I'm like in an Insta, like I need to come up with ideas. Mm-hmm. Like I need to like, I will make sure that I just try to put myself in situations where I need to learn something new. That's when ideas come, or that's when you get, your interest is piqued. And you do have to, you can't just do comedy about comedy. That's boring. Mm-hmm. You know, they say never write about writing. That's boring. Mm-hmm. And then if I want to get my brain percolating once I have an idea, but I'm like, well, what do I do with it? What do I do with it? I'll take a walk because that helps me think, mm-hmm. but I'll do it without music. Or sometimes maybe like very like undistracting music, but mostly I try to do it without music. And then sometimes you just gotta like rest. You gotta hang out with friends,
mm-hmm.
goof around.
Right, right. Because ideas come, yeah, like when you're with them.
Yeah, I think I've had more ideas with my friends mm-hmm. than when I'm sitting there trying to be like, what are those?
Because it's like you're left with your inner critic who's just an asshole. So it's like with your always. Friends, you're bouncing it against your friends who love you and think you're funny. So like yeah. the ideas want to come in front of them. They don't want to like appear in front of your inner critic. You know, that's harder.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's honestly your inner critic is like always going to the most judgmental open mic. You can't tell what ideas are good or bad.
Yeah,
you totally. Can't. They're not going to laugh for you. They don't want to laugh for you.
Oh my God. I was just telling, I do stand up as well. And I was talking to some new comics and I was like, I can tell from their sets at the show. I was like, beware of going to too many open mics because they're making comedy for toxic people and toxic environment. Like you lose base with what's funny. Like if you want to know what's Jennifer Saunders said this in her book, Absolutely Fabulous Creator. She said this in her book, like, you know, French and Saunders, like they would just get ideas from life. If you want to write comedy, you have to write about life. You have to live life. Go to lunch, read a magazine.
Yes.
Like that's where it is.
Yes. And honestly, you'll be happier. And that's also like a thing where I think people feel like they have to drill comedy or drill whatever the art form that they do is. And yes, you should be dedicated, but to only do it, it's impossible. And even those who do art all the time and who seem to always be working, they have to do something else. You have to, or you'll burn out. You do burn out. And that's mm-hmm. something you don't want to do.
Yeah.
And yes, oh, I always am very like find friends, hang out with friends, or even like if for me, a challenge that I found because I moved back here from LA mm-hmm. and a lot of my friends who I had out here had moved. So I was in the position where I couldn't really, I had a few friends, but I couldn't hang out with them all the time. Mm-hmm. I had fewer friends. And so I had less people that I could really bounce stuff with. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think it's really important to try to be brave and get out there and like join other groups. I joined a running group. I would just like go hang out, you know, at like a regular bar or something, or like whatever your activity is that gets you, you don't have to have like the closest. Obviously, it's fun when you can really have a close friendship who you can mm-hmm. like be super goofy with and everything. Mm-hmm. But even if it's just like starting a random conversation with somebody or mm-hmm. Having really like quick small talk can even, in my opinion, can even inspire a lot of creativity.
Yeah, super cool.
Because you get to hear about somebody else's life for a second, even if it's just like, oh, hey, do you like that, you know, type of orange that you're buying or something? And then they can be like, If they're not like, get away from me, which is obviously in itself, I guess, something where you're like, yeah. Well, I guess that's some material. don't ask about oranges. People don't want to tell you their secret orange, you know, recipes. Yeah. But I think it even that is enough. It can be enough. It's not as much fun as like having a friend you can really goof around with. But
Yeah, there's lots of ways to slice the cake, whatever, slice an apple, slice an orange, lemon, I don't know.
We slice all the snacks. We're good.
Slicing the snacks. There's other ways to slice the snacks. There we go. That's it.
Yeah.
Coined right here. That is coined right here. Okay.
I like that as a copyright sound as well. That has been coined right here.
Yeah, we just did it. That means the copyright's already been established. Cool. Perfect. So I have a question for one of my characters, and I don't usually put on the wig, but we're going to do it today because this one, certain je ne sais quoi, comes out when she has a wig. So here we go. I, Lauren Boebert, and the one patriot with the guts to be on a podcast with a bunch of snowflakes. So listen, when you make a parody, how do you make sure it hits its target? And I don't mean election interference targets or gun targets for my five-year-old uses in the playground. I mean in like the comedic sense. Look at me using words.
Oh, that's a great, how do you hit your target? You know, I would say a lot of, let's see, if you're parodying somebody, I think what's smart is you have to know what their stance is. You have to know about this person, and you have to then try and know what you're pointing out that you think is something to note, you know, something that you could maybe point out if you're parodying, you know, make sure that it like, what are you showcasing about this parody that you're making? What do you think is either ridiculous or what do you think is notable? That's, I think, the most important part. Know what you are parodying. Know what it is, the subject.
Right. Like, what's the target of my speech or what I'm trying to say? Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go take the secrets of the left-wing media and go teach the right-wing to do parody. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck. Okay.
She's so able. She doesn't know that, like, when they try to do parody, it's like when they punch down, it's not funny punching down.
No.
They think it's funny.
No, I think punching down is not.
It always just sounds like Uncle Tony at the dinner table when they try, like when the right wing tries like parody. It's just like, it just sounds like that to me. Just all like.
I mean, it's music, you know, it's music. I would say just, know what you're talking about. Do the research.
Right. You just got to know, understand the topic fully. Ken said, like, if it's unfortunate, like if someone else in the audience is like, oh, I know more, like that's not. Like if you don't do the research, it's unfortunate. Then the audience would be like, I know more. Like you're in a malinformed sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also like people will be like, you know, if you do something and it's clear that you don't know what you're parodying or what you're talking about, or it definitely doesn't make your piece strong. It makes your piece look like a parody of a parody.
Yeah.
And then it becomes like a cycle of parody. And then everybody's like swirling in parody. And then, you know, it's just confusion. It's honestly, life gets confusing. So yeah, I think, you know.
And that sort of nails on a chalkboard for me personally. Like it's my pet peeve, like not, it's like people who take first level observations and make a sketch of a parody, especially like political humor, because there's so much being done. So you really got to dig deep. What do you mean? Be really specific. And just, there's so much like top, like first glance sketch. It just nails on a chalkboard. It really drives me crazy. But, you know, what are you going to do? But not at your show. Not what you guys do.
We do our very best. Yes. You know, we do our very best.
Doing that. Cool. All right. So where can people come find you, follow you, figure out what's going on in your life and in your career and stuff? Where can they follow you?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm on Instagram, where I post occasionally at Carmesan Cheeses.
Love it.
Yep. It's a cheese pun. And then, yeah, I perform in New York. I perform around New York. I have a monthly show at Westside Comedy Club with two fellow Daily Show folk. It's called Party Hat, and it is the first Wednesday of every month. And then otherwise, you know, TBD. I'll let you know when more stuff comes.
Hell yeah. I guess. Hell yeah. Just look over on Insta. Cool. Well, thank you for joining us. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logie. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogie.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com.